Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Friday, July 29th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, that will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you're unable to call in live on the show or prefer not to, listening to those shows repeatedly can serve as a tutorial to help you get the most benefit out of these tools as you apply them in your own life. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions, answers and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And if you're able to call in live, you can call us at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it'll put a little question mark or the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and introduce you by your area code. We always appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. That intention is to be of service. And even if I'm in the middle of a monologue or reading from the Way of Mastery or A Course in Miracles, I welcome people to call that number and press 1. I will either see it instantaneously and turn on your microphone or when it seems appropriate in the flow of the show, and that's always welcome. Comments, questions, answers, various levels of feedback are very welcome on this show. So what we've been doing so far this week is exploring the 17th lesson in the Way of Mastery. Yesterday when I was doing this and talking about it, I hit a part of the lesson where it's talking about this mythical idea of how we came to be from pure consciousness to a sense of individuated self as soul to, and this is all happening before there's any physicality, any universe, any spark of light, any dust, any size or shape of any kind. There's no physical substance. There is just pure consciousness. And Lesson 16 moves us from that event of pure consciousness constellating constituting all there is. And then somewhere in pure consciousness, the thought, I wonder what it would be like to imagine myself as different from myself. And fear was born, and eventually egoic consciousness was created, and eventually the physical universe was created. And that's Lesson 16. And Lesson 17, it starts talking about now egoic consciousness has been born, and yet we haven't created a physical body for the humans to exist in. So when did that happen? That happened when consciousness decided to focus its awareness on physicality and begin to grow a physical body. And of course, all of this is pure speculation. All of this is metaphor and parable and mythic history carrying many levels of meaning and never intended to be literal. And yet, there are people who will hear it and will take it literally and either revel in it and say, wow, that's great, I always knew that was the truth, or fight against it. And some might choose to use it in their I'm right, you're wrong debates with people, whether it's political or medical or philosophical. And I'm cautioning against that. I'm trying to remind people that when it talks in here about how this was our thought before we came into physical body, we can't know that to be true. And if there was an essence of a thought like that, it didn't have words. It didn't have language. It didn't sound like the words that you're using right now to point at that. And where it says, in the lesson, in the moment where the sperm and the egg came together and there was a flash of light, that's where human life begins. That's not intended to be used as an argument for or against any current political or legal or philosophical discussions on the planet. It's simply this metaphor, this image, this parable, this shift in perception that we create, the perceptions we create. It's a shift away from the practiced thought pattern that says we are nothing but the physical, or the practiced thought pattern that says we are only that which we think and say and do. So the essence of this work is contained in several of the key phrases of like the headings of these various lessons, including, one of the headings of a lesson, that 13, that says, you are unlimited spirit. What does that mean? I don't know. Those are just words. However, they're meant to expand a thought pattern that I might create about myself beyond the thought that I am just the body, beyond the thought that my only value comes from what I think and say and do in and as the body. Where that takes each of us on our journey is yet to be seen. And this is just food for thought. This is just stirring the pot. This is just expanding consciousness. And again, it's just words. The word is not the thing, as Krishnamurti would bring us back to. So we were talking yesterday. We stopped right at the point where there's a new section titled, Your Soul Begins to Speak. And the last section we read was titled, The Journey of Awakening Begins. And in that section it talked about how most people don't truly start to do their spiritual work until they're in their 30s or 40s. That is very rare for somebody in the single digits or the early teen years to actually question deep spiritual truths. It happens, it's just not the norm. And now the section is titled, Your Soul Begins to Speak. And the text reads, Now the soul begins to speak. The connection that was once lost, your awareness of yourself as pure spirit and the soul, that connection was lost because of the shock of coming into the physical. Now it begins to be reestablished. It was never really lost. It was just forgotten. It was suppressed. It became the background instead of the foreground. And now it begins to whisper in the depth of your being. It comes to you in the form of your dreams. You begin to notice books that you never noticed before. You might wander into the spiritual section of a bookstore, not even understanding what compelled you to do so. And there you might pick up a copy of this book or the Yeshua Letters or A Course in Miracles or some other such book that begins to trigger within you a thirst and a longing. A friend suddenly invites you to come to a workshop, the kind you've never been to before. And yet, when you go, something triggers you, something touches you, something begins to awaken. You may not notice it, but it actually triggers a physiological state within the body, within the chakra or energy system. The heart begins to stir in its slumber, and the mind thirsts for knowledge, a knowledge unlike any that it has gathered in its identification with egoic consciousness. So as your soul begins to awaken, to reconnect with its awareness that it is not just the physical body, and it begins to speak. It speaks in impressions. It speaks in yearnings and longings. It speaks in, quote, coincidences, close quotes. It speaks in being drawn to certain friends or certain activities. Because the mind thirsts for knowledge different than anything it has gathered as it was identifying with egoic consciousness. The text goes on and says, the longing to awaken has come. From this moment, though you do not understand it, you begin to attract, perhaps slowly at first, perhaps stumbling a bit now and then, you attract exactly those situations that will keep prodding you to look deeper. A meditation teacher comes. A prayer group comes that you feel called to join. you begin the process of your study. And a new question is emerging. No longer do you just focus on the question, how can I survive? How can I make money? How do I do all these things? Now a new question emerges in your mind. Who am I? There may be many forms to that question, but the question remains the same. Quote, who am I? What am I? From where have I come? What is life? What is creation? How can there be anything at all? These questions begin to stir in the mind. Often they first make their appearance in some form around the age of 10 to 12 as you enter into a stage of life that is your first taste of individuation. Just like when a child was born and it began to sense that it was other than its mother's body, at around the age of 10 to 12, you begin to sense that you are other than your mother and father, that there is something that wants to think for itself and be for itself. Often those questions will begin to come. That's the first stirring. Usually questions are not attended to. There's too much else to do. You still need to learn to think. You still need to learn to drive a car. You need to learn to balance a checkbook. Later, those questions will occur again, generally in the early to mid-20s. But again, the momentum is come to be established as a psychological being, and so the questions are suppressed. Into the 30s, and most definitely by the 40s, those questions begin to press upon the consciousness. Now you know how to make money. You know how to balance a checkbook. You've done these things in the world. You've had sex. You've baked cakes. You've thrown birthday parties. You've gotten drunk. You've done it all. But something else is gnawing within you. This is also a point of great challenge. And you ask yourself, quote, what will I be committed unto? Love or fear? Will fear run me? Will the very principles that I have identified myself with and those that I have used and utilized to ensure my survival, my ordering of life, will these things become more important than realizing my higher self or awakening as the Christ within? Critical questions. Everyone comes to answer at one point or another, perhaps not in every lifetime. Most of us know people that never concern themselves with questions like this, and yet everyone on a spiritual path is working with questions. And the goal that we're told is most useful is to learn to live in that questioning state without demanding the answer, without demanding a way to think or speak about it that can be put into words and communicated easily to others. This makes me think about the story with Pierre Pratervand, when he had an imam who was the father of one of his good friends when he was in his 20s. And as this religious leader from another tradition, the imam was a good target for someone like Pierre, because Pierre had gotten hooked up with a spiritual group that said they had the one true definition for God. Here's what God is. It was a concise statement, a collection of words or phrases. And Pierre got up his nerve one day and said, I'm going to go show up this imam, because he thinks, you know, that their religion, that they've got, but we're right. You know, he was so proud of having found this spiritual group and bought into what they were saying about the true meaning of God. So he was headed to have a discussion with the imam. On the way to the discussion with the imam, Pierre recalled the story of the frog sitting in the well. And the frog had spent its whole life in the well. And one day another frog fell into the well and started talking about the vastness of the ocean and the blue sky, horizon to horizon. And the frog at the bottom of the well thought, oh, this guy's crazy. Because that frog had never had any experience other than the confines of this dry well. And so as Pierre was walking to this meeting with the imam, he thought, I'm going to educate this imam. I'm going to be the frog that's been out in the world, that's seen the great ocean and the vastness of the sky, and I'm going to go educate this poor little imam at the bottom of his well. So he goes and he has some nice pleasantries with this father of his friend. And then eventually he says, so imam, tell me, in your tradition, you know, what do they say God is? Or, you know, what do they call God? What is the name for God? And the imam carefully, slowly breathed into the answer and said, well, Pierre, if you took all the branches on all the trees on the entire planet as pens, and you used every drop of water in the oceans and lakes and rivers and streams as ink, and you wrote for eternity, you would never exhaust all of the names for the Creator. You can't be done knowing yourself because you are a part of the spark of life and creation. This becomes the challenge. You'll ask yourself, what will I be committed unto, love or fear? Will the very principles that I have identified myself with about how to survive and have a career that people will be amazed at, having my life in order, will those things become more important than realizing the vast expansiveness of consciousness itself of which I am a part? Will that become more important than choosing love in each new present moment and choosing to teach only love? Will that become more important than awakening the Christ within me? The text goes on. The next section is titled, Dismantling the Blocks to Spirit. The text reads, for you see, awakening requires a dismantling of the structures of consciousness by which you have been ordering your perceptions of the third dimension. Ultimately, to truly awaken completely requires the dismantling of very subtle, deeply embedded patterns of perception that were already making up your soul prior to your incarnation in this life. The slate must be wiped clean so that all that remains is the reality of spirit with no filament or trace of egoic consciousness left. That is not an easy thing to do. And yet, paradoxically, it requires no effort except for the effort to be love, to presence love, to teach only love, to share only loving thoughts. Love is the great healer. Love, as the energy of creation, is that which erases the imprint in the depth of the subtle soul. The patterns that you brought forth with you as a soul are like a magnet. That is, they attract energy states in the physical dimension and the experience that are resonated with those patterns. Often when you say you, quote, fall in love, close quote, it is just that you've come into contact with another field of energy that happens to fit. It fits hand in glove with the very patterns of consciousness that you carry in the depths of your being. Old memories of other incarnations are triggered when you visit a certain physical location. And the emotion feels so good and warm in the heart that you think, quote, surely this is where I must live on the planet. This is with whom I must spend my life. Close quotes. And yet, all of it is emerging as the result of your karma, that is, as the result of patterns and effects that have come from those patterns. Awakening does require vigilance. Awakening requires that rather than merely going with the reactions of the third dimensional being, you begin to question, you begin to observe, you begin to feel, and you begin to think more deeply. You begin to engage in some form of spiritual practice, whether it be meditation or prayer or something else. All of these things are modalities which interrupt the momentum of being caught up in the third dimensional experience. You interrupt the pattern of being caught up in the world long enough to sit quietly for half an hour, or to chant, or to walk. You do something in a different way. You are beginning to turn the momentum of the mind back upon itself. You are beginning to become self-observant rather than world-observant. Now, for all of you that would like to quicken and hasten that process, the answer is very simple. Spend more time becoming self-observant and less time being concerned with what is going on in the world, and no time blaming the world for your state of being. No time blaming the world, not your parents, not society, not God, not creation itself, but owning your creation of your experience of life moment to moment. That is the way to accelerate, quicken the process of awakening. The next section is titled, Assuming Complete Responsibility and Power. Here is an important word that we will share with you. You've heard it many times before, but when you truly reach a point of assuming 100% responsibility for what you think, what you feel, what you see, and what you experience, this creates a quantum leap in the other direction. It creates a quantum leap towards self-observation, toward the freedom that you are seeking, toward the healing of the soul, toward the realization of your purpose, toward awakening. Without it, without the awakening, without taking 100% responsibility, the spiritual journey never quite gets off the ground, literally. You never quite ascend. And you cannot ascend without the assumption of complete responsibility. You must extricate yourself from the psychic enmeshment with other webs of relationship in the sense that you have come to perceive that they are causing your decisions. In other words, you must assume power. Now, in a previous worksheet, even though Dr. Michael Rice probably to this day has still never read Way of Mastery, but certainly before he created his reality management worksheet process. He had no exposure to the way of mastery. But a previous worksheet has a line in it that I used to highlight every time we would use that worksheet in the support group. And the line is, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. And it was highlighted in all bold on the worksheet process. It might have been all caps, all bold. The truth is, my reality is strictly internal. It is unique to me, and it is created out of my own thoughts. Now, a little bit later on in that worksheet, there was a line that said, with blame, I hide my power. And almost every time I would do a worksheet in the support group, I would ask people, when they got to the part about, with blame, I hide my power, I would ask them to stop and consider, what power is it you're hiding? And I'd get blank stares, and there'd be some silence, and then I'd bring their attention back to the all bold, all caps line that said, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, is unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. And then I came down and said, so if I blame my experience in life on anyone or anything else, I'm hiding from myself my infinite power to create my experience. I'm the one that's created my experience, and if I blame somebody else for it, I'm hiding my power. Owning. If you want to quicken this process, if you want to quicken the process of dismantling the blocks to spirit, the answer is very simple. You simply need to spend more time becoming self-observant, moving into that 100% responsibility for everything you're creating as your experience in life. Not the physical, external things that are coming in life, but your experience of them. That's an internal process. And so you spend more time being self-observant and less time being concerned with what's going on in the world, and no time blaming the world for your state of being. You don't blame your parents, you don't blame society, you don't blame the creator, but you begin owning that you have been the one creating your experience of life. And there, you're stepping into your power. Assuming complete responsibility and power is the next heading. Here is an important word that we will share with you. You've heard it many times before, responsibility. It's not blame, it's not guilt, it's not should have, it's a tool I can pick up. I am response-able. I am able to respond differently the next time a similar situation comes up if I acknowledge my role in creating my experience, my role in thinking, speaking, or reacting in life. But when you truly reach a point of assuming 100% responsibility for what you think, what you feel, what you see, and what you experience, this creates a quantum leap in the other direction. It creates a quantum leap towards self-observation, toward the freedom that you're seeking, toward the healing of the soul, toward the realization of your purpose, toward awakening. Without it, the spiritual journey never quite gets off the ground. You never quite ascend. You cannot ascend without the assumption of complete 100% responsibility. You must extricate yourself from the psychic enmeshment with other webs of relationship in the sense that you've come to perceive that they are causing your decisions. In other words, you must assume your power, the power that comes from realizing Your reality is strictly internal. It's unique to you and is created by your own thoughts. Love or fear, you choose. The choice is always yours. The text goes on and says, you are well aware of those in your third dimensional reality who assume power. You sometimes love them or loathe them, but they are powerful. Can you assume the same power in your own life? Can you come to look at your beloved if you are in a relationship and say, quote, you know something? This being is not causing how I feel. This being can never fulfill me. This being has nothing that I can extract from them in order to fill up my sense of lack. I alone in my journey to the Creator, I am alone in my journey to the Creator, for I alone abide in creation. That is, I am an individuated spark of divinity. It is within me. The kingdom of heaven is within me. What I am seeking is within me. What fulfills me must come forth from within me. This is why, from the Gospel of Thomas, it was said, this is why, the text here reads, this is why I once said, if you do not bring forth what is within you, what is within you will destroy you. If you bring forth what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, and what is within you is love, is Christ, is your conscious connection to the source of all creation. If you don't bring it forth, you will feel burdened and unfulfilled. Usually, most human beings go through their entire life with a sense of unfulfillment, lamenting what the world has done for them or to them, lamenting the decisions and choices they've made in the past. They become burdened by what is on the outside, along with what is in the past. And eventually the body dies, spirit withers on the vine. At death, another quantum leap occurs that is as shocking as they discover themselves to be popped back into another vibrational state that often triggers great fear. Very few beings upon your human plane have entered death consciously. It is indeed time, even for those of you who are hearing this lesson, to simply make a decision. Quote, I will enter into the transition called death with deliberate consciousness. I will make sure by beginning now that I carry no resentment, that I have dismantled the false perceptions I have of everyone or anything doing something to me. And as the body does enter that state, I will release the world and require nothing of it. I will cancel every goal I've ever had for the body, for the world, for the people around me. I will not long to run off in freedom, but I will experience death consciously. I will notice the subtle energy changes as I flip from this dimension into another at the speed of light. Close quotes. Beloved friends, come to understand at this stage of our journey together the true intensity of who and what you are. Understand that you are not so much dealing with, quote, things, close quotes, in the world, as you are dealing with patterns of energy that reflect in some way what is already occurring in your consciousness. If you are experiencing things in the third dimensional plane, It can mean only that you have chosen to vibrate at a certain frequency, or otherwise you could not have the experience. You could not have the experience of running into a wall with your body unless you were vibrating at the same rate as the wall. Is it possible to change the vibrational frequency of the physical body? Listen very carefully. I'm going to say something rather unique. In response to the question, is it possible to change the vibrational frequency of the physical body? The answer is no. It is only possible to change the vibrational frequency of your consciousness out of which the body has emerged. This is the kind of thing that Dr. Michael Rice used to talk about a lot more in the earlier years, 18 or 19 years ago when I was first introduced to this work. He would talk a lot about focusing at the cause level rather than the effect level. If I'm trying to change the vibrational frequency of my body, I'm focusing at the effect level. It doesn't work. I need to go to the cause level. And this book is saying very clearly, the vibrational field, the vibrational rate of my consciousness is what has given rise to my body. So if I'm trying to change the vibrational frequency of my body, I'm going to become eternally frustrated. I need to change the vibrational frequency of my consciousness out of which the body has emerged. Michael gives the example of a 3D projector, and it projects an image of a bottle on the table. Now, the table may actually be there, and yet the bottle is just a projected image. It's a hologram. It's a projected image, 3D. And if you have somebody who walks into that room, and they don't know anything about 3D projectors, and it's very lifelike, very real, it's like one of those special effects movie things that we see so much on our movie and TV screens today that look, they look real. It's the deep fake stuff. It looks real. And yet it's completely generated from a computer image and a projector. And then you tell the person who doesn't know anything about these false projections that they'll get a tremendous reward if they simply move the bottle from one side of the table to the other. And no matter what they do, they can't change the appearance of where the bottle is. They can't move the bottle. Because the bottle is simply, the image of the bottle that shows up in their mind is simply an effect of the projector in the other room. So in order to change where the bottle shows up on the projected image, they've got to go to the source image and change its vibrational frequency or its actual position in the room. This book says very clearly, if you try to change the vibrational frequency of your physical body, you will be frustrated eternally because your physical body is nothing more than the manifestation of the vibrational frequencies you're holding in your consciousness. So you must go to the cause level and make a change there, and that's the only time the effects change. The text goes on. The next section is titled Turning Inward. To go to the cause level, this requires a turning about in the seat of the soul or a changing of the momentum of consciousness, not outward, but inward, not as an escape from the world. It is not something you have to do all day, every day, but you spend time in prayer and meditation. You spend time dismantling the false perceptions that this book calls the process of forgiveness. You spend time breathing and relaxing. You begin to allow changes to occur in the choices you are making so that they come more into alignment with your growing understanding of yourself as a creator, as a soul. You begin to change your environment. You paint the color of the walls of your bedroom a different color, one that brings a sense of pleasantness to you. You change your physical environment completely by moving to a different apartment. Many of you know perfectly well that often it means the changing of relationships. And initially this does make sense. But there's a point in which you realize that you could keep changing relationships ad nauseum and never get anywhere. You realize that now is the time to settle down, be with the one you are, the ones you are with, and yet utilize your time with them to discover what patterns have been running you. It is time for self-awareness, turning the momentum of the mind back toward the higher S, the capital S self. Time to ask yourself, quote, why do I think what I think? Why do I see what I see? Why did I see what I saw? Why did I react the way I reacted? Close quotes. Eventually, the soul that is truly committed to awakening does not flee uncomfortable situations until it believes it has fully extracted all the wisdom that it can. There is a way of knowing when that occurs, and we'll get to that later. But in short, when there is just a quiet sense of peace, and you can look upon the players and the experiences you have just had with perfect equanimity and peace, and you see them as perfectly innocent, and you detect that there is nothing in the body that is not at peace, the heart is not racing, the shoulders are not tight. When that happens, you truly understand that you are not in fear. Then it is time to move on. If there is reactivity in the mind, and the mind is telling you that it is because of anything that emerges in your relationship with your brothers or sisters, rest assured the lesson is not complete. If your, quote, principles, close quote, have been, quote, violated, close quotes, rest assured there is still much for you to learn. Remember always that all events are neutral. In large measure, the process of awakening is a process whereby you dissolve the value you have placed upon certain ideas and certain perceptions of what life is and what life is for. So again, coming back to the statement that all events are neutral, they carry only the meaning for us. They have only the impact on us that we create by the interpretations we place on them. In large measure, the process of awakening is a process whereby you dissolve the value you have placed on certain ideas and certain perceptions of what life is and what is for. You change the interpretations you've created and placed on the neutral events. Yes, it says, there are times you will be troubled as you come to realize that what you thought the world was for and everything you've been putting your energy into means nothing. Often this precipitates a period of what has been called by certain mystics the dark night of the soul. It is really not the dark night of the soul. It is the dark night of the ego and the healing, the awakening of the soul. The way of transformation requires utmost personal responsibility. Utmost personal dedication. No one can do it for you. And the patterns you feel weighed down by the fears that are yet within the mind will remain with you for all of eternity until you decide to heal them. From that desire, you will extract the situations, the teachers, the books, the experiences that provide for you the opportunity to do just that, to heal them, to integrate them, to take 100% responsibility for creating them. The text goes on and says, there is an acceleration of the healing process only when you completely release any valuation on victimhood. That is, the belief that somehow, in some way, someone or something has done this to you. There is only an acceleration when you dismantle the belief in victimhood, the valuation of victimhood, valuing the statement that someone or something has done this to you. You've got to release that attachment. Now, that's a simple thought to hear, and a person can shake his or her head. It's another thing to look honestly upon your reactions in life to make sure that you are not at any time perceiving yourself as a victim. The practice of extending love can often teach you that this is so. When you take a situation that, quote, pushes your buttons, close quotes, and you decide to not flee but to stay, this can lead to teaching you the truth of your reality. That is why the practice of dismantling false perceptions, the belief that people have hurt you, the belief that they could hurt you, the belief that you are just the body, the belief that bad things are being done to you, dismantling that series of perceptions, which this book calls forgiveness, is so extraordinarily valuable. In fact, you could say that ultimately, the practice of dismantling those false perceptions is the whole of spirituality. The practice of forgiveness, which is the practice of dismantling negative and false perceptions, is the totality of spirituality. Why? Because that process of dismantling false perceptions means you let the world off the hook. You step out of any sense of victim consciousness, and then even beyond that, you start dismantling your false perceptions that they have made in error, perceptions of one's brothers and sisters and the world and God. You start to perceive more accurately the truth of life, your true nature, and the truth of the brothers and sisters and the fellow beings of brilliance and light who are on this journey with you. Ultimately, this process of dismantling false perceptions, this process of forgiveness, is to dismantle the belief that you were ever justified in allowing the delusion to settle into your own mind where you perceived yourself as separate from the Creator or separate from the brothers and sisters that you're on this journey with, or that you were capable of being victimized. You dismantle all of those perceptions, all of those rationalizations, all of those belief patterns. When this is completed, when forgiveness is completed, when the process of dismantling all false perceptions is completed, that is the establishment of love, the awareness of the energy of creation, moving in, through, as, and around you each new present moment. Beloved friends, look well then to see, quote, where am I perceiving myself as a victim of the world I see? Am I feeling constrained in my relationship? Do I resent my spouse? Do I resent the teacher? Do I resent the traffic? Do I resent my boss? Close quotes. The spouse is not holding you where you are. That one does not have the power to take away from you your ability to look with love upon him or her. So this is the essence of our work. Again, to choose to teach only love. What does that mean? Choose to share only loving thoughts. Vigilance, dedication, no one can do it for you. The goal is moving into the awakened realization that I am 100% responsible for creating my experience of life. In other words, my interpretation of and my valuation of everything that happens to me and around me in the world is far more important than the actual events themselves. So, that's all I'm going to read for today in Lesson 17. We're nearing the end of the lesson. We'll wrap that up on Monday and do some review. Again, the first, all of Lesson 16 and the first part of Lesson 17 were metaphorical. They were parables. They were mythic stories. And now here in the last section of Lesson 17, it's a literal statement that you can learn how you have been creating every experience you've had in life by the way you've chosen to interpret and respond to it. And the more you do that, the more you accelerate your awareness of your true nature and the true nature of the other beings of brilliance and light that are on this journey with you, whether in physical form or not. And then, as we awaken to realize that we are creating an experience in our life that leads us in sadness or fear or pain or anger or guilt or shame or resentment or ridicule or judgment of another or judgment of ourselves, and we realize we don't really like how that feels, then we have instant access to the process because we've been watching the truth of how we are creating our own experience of life. The truth is, my reality is strictly internal. It's unique to me, and it's created out of my own thoughts. And every time I blame anyone or anything else, I hide my power to create my experience of life, which is never turned off. It is always on. The only option I have is where I point it. Do I point it towards love or do I point it towards fear? And all of fear's stepchildren, all of those gradations of emotion that are offshoots of fear or derivatives of fear. There is only love or the absence of love, which some might call fear. Contraction, constriction, judgment, all of these are synonyms for fear. Because love as an energy is always expanding, always creating, always embracing, always allowing, always accepting. And if you wish to transform something, transmute something, transcend something, you need to be in relation to it as love would be in relation to it, as the energy of creation would be in relation to it, in relationship to it. So that's our show for today. We have just a few seconds left before the transition. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a really good weekend.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful weekend yourself and a great show.
Thank you. See ya. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Friday, and it's July the 29th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. It is amazing how fast the days and the months go by. When we come back on Monday, it's going to be August the 1st. I mean, I don't even know where July went. But we just need to enjoy every day to the fullest. We actually went out that we've got Aria today, and we went out to the garden, and she picked a bunch of cherry tomatoes and ate them right there in the garden. And we plan on reheating some of the lasagna. If you're on our Facebook, then you saw where Michael made an awesome tomato sauce out of our cherry tomatoes and then made another batch out of our regular tomatoes. And I made a lasagna out of it last night. And it was absolutely wonderful. So it's awesome to get ingredients straight from the garden, from where we've built the soil and grown the plants and go out and pick the herbs and the tomatoes and the zucchinis and the different things out of the garden. And within just a matter of a few minutes, we've got it in a pot and got it cooked down. And it's just fabulous. And the energy of the food and knowing what you're putting in your body. So we'll give Michael just a minute. I'm not sure if he's having technical issues getting dialed in. But I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and search around and click links and see if he's having some technical issues. All righty. And let us know if you have any questions. That's what this show is here for. Welcome, Michael. I can hear you talking down the hallway, but can't hear you on the phone.
Okay. Now you can hear me.
That's better.
It works better if I plug my headset in. It's
yeah.
kind of one of those things, you know? It's amazing. It's amazing. It's a miracle. Anyway, did you mention the fact that we did a worksheet on the Hear My Voice book club yesterday?
No, I did not.
Oh,
so go ahead and talk about that.
We'll let people know. I don't have the link yet, so we don't have it on our website yet. But watch for it. I will. I'll check as we're speaking to see if Inca has sent us the link yet. Doesn't appear so, but it might be there. In any event. There's a note from her, but don't have the video yet. And so as we're thinking about it, I'll drop her a note. And ask her to send the video. Maybe we'll have it by the time the show's over so we can get it in there. Anyway, it was a good worksheet session. Basically, Yinka did the seven-step worksheet process, and I was there for support. So she's developing her brain cells and looking to understand more. She's been at least once a week with the one of her morning book clubs, been doing worksheets and really enjoying the results she's getting. So she hit another level yesterday, and between the two of us, it turned out to be a pretty good happening. So it was fun. So give me just one second. Do you have the video from yesterday? We'll see if she gets back to me. We may have it then. In any event, beyond that, it's awesome to have you join us. Delighted that you're here. As we step into this amazing set of tools that comes out of the ancient Aramaic language. This tool called forgiveness, a way to clean up the mind of its junk, to remove the toxic energetic patterns that never belong within us, to live in a space where one is willing to honor truth and willing to look under the surface at what's going on with our language, our emotions, and in taking responsibility, moving out the energies that never belonged. So when you carry around hostility and fear, you set up an energy with which you'll tend to pull somebody in who wants to play in the realm of hostility and fear. And so when one's willing to step inside and clean up that hostility and fear game within themselves, life tends to change. We tend to rid ourselves of the energetic patterns that resonate into our space, those energies that never belonged. And the requirement, if you listen to Albert Einstein, he says, the world we've created is a process of our thinking, and it can't be changed without changing our thinking. And so the whole idea of forgiveness is to look at the underlying hidden part of our thought processes, bringing them to conscious awareness, and letting them go, removing them. Einstein offers a very powerful challenge. Here's what he says. A human being is a part of the whole called Bias Universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts, and feelings as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for a few persons nearest us. Task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. So our perceptual system shows us that we are separate and separated from the rest of humanity, and Einstein very brilliantly calls that an optical delusion. It's something our brain makes up, and it's not true. So when someone thinks they're lashing out at another, as the worksheet says, I get the original, they get a carbon copy, and they may not be home for delivery. And when I recognize that, I have the opportunity to, as he says, widen my circle of compassion into the space where, rather than seeing self and other as separate, we start to experience ourselves as part of one energy system. And when that occurs, what happens, rather than living out of a separate and separated mind, or the appearance of a separate and separated mind, we begin to live out of the energy that is the whole, the energy which, you know, in the ancient teachings they said we live, move, and have our being. And what is that energy but that of love? So when we return to the truth of who we are, we have a chance to change. The unconscious dynamics. Eradicate doubt and fear and come back into our natural state, which is the presence of joy, the presence of a human life. Now, the world gives us all kinds of substitutions for that. And we tend to think that when we accomplish a goal and get a buzz of dopamine, we're happy and think, the goal of the world is to make us happy. And of course, when one thinks that's the game, consumerism takes over and need more and more and more and more. And when we give that unconscious dynamic up and start to connect with the truth of who we are, then life really steps up to the plate and brings us into this active presence of love that is the essential nature of every human being. So the objective of this work is to address, to face, to remove those things, forgive those things that never belonged within our structure. Return to the truth of human life. Of course, we have the liberty to go in any direction that we choose to go. Lots of people want freedom and think that freedom means that you can do whatever you want without responsibility, without the universe dealing back like energy. But really, truly, there's no freedom in that sense. There is liberty. Of course, we can do whatever we choose. But being that we're part of a whole energy system, the universe will always return that energy that's in kind. A lot of people are looking for someone to save them while they carry on with the types of behavior that create trauma and drama in their lives and want to escape the drama and trauma while they go on carrying out the behaviors that produce drama and trauma. You know, if you remember the term sustained incoherence, you know, the terms that we use in the worksheet, physicist David Bohm, in essence, in his work with the mind, offers that the problem we humans have is our thinking, and it's our thinking that causes the problems in our lives. Agreeing wholeheartedly with Einstein. But then what he says is the problem is nobody wants to look at the way they're thinking as the cause. They want to look outside themselves for the cause and keep on thinking in the same way that generates problems. And he refers to that as sustained incoherence. When the truth is, we can, even if there are generations and generations of patterns based in that hostility and fear, we can remove those patterns from within us. When you look at relationships, the underlying purpose of relationship is to show us what it is we don't want to face in ourselves and support us in being freed from conflict and pain. Without understanding that higher purpose of relationship, many use their relationships as a retreat from life and, you know, finding somebody else to blame for what's happening inside of them and using that to prop up their sustained incoherence. Issues into a relationship, sooner or later, we have to face those issues and work through them, free ourselves from them. And that's the purpose of the process of forgiveness. That's the whole bottom line of that particular tool. When one uses relationships to keep unresolved pain at bay, what ends up happening is over time is each time a pained perception within them surfaces, if they're not aware that it's something that's generated from within them and they can forgive it and remove it, what they end up doing is hooking it up into their brain's image of their partner. And we call that the file folder effect. And the file folder effect is the major destroyer of relationships. we're actually, it's the act of hooking people up to those pain files that's a major destroyer, but the mechanism of it is that file folder effect. You know, in workshops, we'll often ask the question, you know, to illustrate the file folder effect, you know, what's the Lone Ranger's horse's name? And we'll generally end up with three different answers. People say Tonto, Trigger, or Silver. Of course, Silver is the horse's name, but the fact that people bring Tonto and Trigger in there, they're all old Westerns, and that's the file folder effect. When those things are linked together, the question is asked, and the mind, being a resonance device, simply spits up its answers. In the same way, if I say, what's the problem in a relationship, and I've hooked my brain's image up of a particular person up to sadness or fear or rage or guilt or blame, then according to that file folder effect, those things inside of me, and whenever I'm in someone's presence, those energetic patterns are going to be resonating. And if I'm in some sort of trauma or pain, and it seems to be over that person, sooner or later I have to open my eyes and start to recognize that what I'm feeling is going on inside of me, and the reason I'm feeling it is because in their presence is because I've hooked it up to that particular feeling, up to my brain's image of them. So when they show up, when they resonate, when the image of that person is resonated within my structure, then everything I've hooked into my brain's image of them comes into experience. And if I have no idea of the file folder effect, I think, oh, then they're really the cause of this in me. As opposed to, well, no, actually it was 10 years ago that was resonated in their presence and they got hooked together. So now when that person is in front of me, that trauma is moving. Of course, if that's just one event, that's not generally going to create that much of a problem. But over time, as people do this, you know, there's a saying that many have in relationships, the honeymoon is over. What happened that causes the honeymoon to be over? Why is that shiny, wonderful person not on the honeymoon with you anymore? Why are you not honeymooning with them? Because of what you hooked up of your own unresolved pain with your brain's image of them, so that when they appear, just like what's the Lone Ranger's horse's name, all of those answers resonate in the mind. For someone that's an old Westerns buff. So if people use relationship to try to keep their unresolved pain out of sight, comes the destroyer of one's perceptual construct about any given relationship. And one either takes responsibility and realizes that that pain is internally generated and it has a set of tools to detach, to remove those links within the mind, or the tendency is going to be to end up in continuous degeneration of the relationship. There's no other reason for, quote unquote, the honeymoon to be over. There's no other reason at all. So when we start consciously creating interdependent relationships, then if one partner or another is in some sort of pain, the movement is toward healing, the movement is toward connecting and joining in love rather than out of the file folder effect and out of hostility or fear, and waking up to who we are rather than playing the game of blame, the cultural patterning of codependence. And codependence matches, you know, is very similar to our definition of denial. What's a codependent relationship? It's a relationship in which I'm feeling something and I am sure I'm feeling it because of somebody else. The old blame game. And of course, that tongue-in-cheek line I like to offer, if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, sooner or later you've got to notice that you're the only one that was there every time. And that you're involved in your life. And many never awaken to that fact or grow up and move out of the attack and accusation mode. When that happens, sadly, what that does is it leaves the work of healing to the next shattered generation that starts out with a base of pain. And these are dynamics for so many people that have been going on for generation upon generation upon generation. And each generation that doesn't step in and do their work leaves a deeper generational trauma within the mind of the next generation. You know, you look at that story in the ancient scriptures, where they talk about this group of people called the Jews who were wandered in the desert for 40 years. This state of unconsciousness, lost, seemingly in a hot, sandy place, but of course, kind of ridiculous to think of a group of people who understand astronomy so well being lost in a 35 square mile area for 40 years. That's kind of outrageous. What they were really talking about, that word desert is a code word for being unconscious of the dynamics that are running in your life. So the objective is to undo those generational patterns, move out of the desert and into what in that metaphor, and it is a metaphor, it's not about a literal hot sandy place, to move out of the desert, the unconsciousness, into what they called the promised land. What is the promised land? It's nothing but the land of conscious co-creation. The inability to mature or take responsibility for one's life and do their work leads to language. You know, things like you made me, you know, you're responsible for my mad, my sad, my afraid, my embarrassment. When that Fowlfolder effect becomes so strong in its resonance, people come to the point where they're no longer able to hide their unresolved fear, rage, grief, sadness behind the shine of a new relationship. That's when somebody attempts to escape and bounces from relationship to relationship. And in fact, in that state, there's nobody home. There's a hollow ego self, generally looking for self-gratification, avoidance of pain, that attempts to escape through blame, functioning in hostility mode. And the problem with that is people relate to themselves and each other as bodies or as objects. And of course, like any other object in this culture, when you're finished with it, you throw it away. Another quote from Albert Einstein that comes to mind is, he says, anger is found only in the bosom of fools. If one maintains themselves, their awareness of themselves and others as beings, rather than bodies, then you realize that relationship is eternal. So the willingness to look inside and deal with the internal dynamics instead of this game of projection, instead of building one's brain's image out of their pain and projecting it into others, their brain's image of others. As one uses a tool, they go into deep internal resolution, and that results in real growth. The more connected people become in relationships, the deeper opportunity will be to reach into those generational, parental, childhood issues that are aroused, and in taking responsibility and acting through the forgiveness process, removing those literally from the mind, removing the patterns from physiology. At that point, that's when the really sweet promise of relationship becomes fulfilled. So in essence, that's the purpose of our whole conversation here is to introduce and to support the regular, ongoing, consistent, persistent use of the process of forgiveness, to literally remove from our structures anything that, any energetic pattern that does not belong within the structure. And the energetic patterns that don't belong within the structure are energetic patterns that result in some sort of a painful response. If you're not yet introduced, if you've not yet been introduced or not using the forgiveness tool, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that link, and it'll start walking you through everything you need to know about the internal process of forgiveness. Nothing to do with the external, what the world calls forgiveness. I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but rather, how do I delve inside myself to remove my stored in my physiology that creates my physical, mental, or emotional pain responses? So the word forgiveness there is about removal, not about letting somebody off the hook, because pain's moving within. You can also go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, H-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app, and there's a place where all you have to do is pick up your phone, click, 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 and you're doing forgiveness work right there on your phone. When you complete a given worksheet, you can just make a copy of it, store it as a PDF in your phone, so it's there for future use. So we invite you to take the tools, put them to work, and then as questions are aroused, the purpose of this show is to create support and assistance in clarifying and using these tools. So if you're out there in listener land and you have a question for us, if any of that resonates, a question, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you push 1, that'll raise your hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know you have a question or a thought for us, and we'll be having a conversation.
I have a question that was texted to me based on kind of what you were talking about there. So
great.
This young lady has been loving and kind and sweet, and this other person is just coming back on her like crazy and saying horrible things to her. So how does she draw that in? What's happening there? Like, she's not responsible for how he's behaving, but yet there's something that's continually drawing that back to her space. So I don't know if you can add something to that, and then we do have a hand up.
Okay. Well, my thought would be, you know, again, probably the greatest atrocity done to us down through the ages, and we've bought into, is that we've hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And if I roll along in my life and I say, well, I'm a happy, wonderful person, everything's grand, and you know, I'm just fine, but I find myself drawing people in more often than, you know, accident would dictate, who are abusive toward me, then there's some part of me, and this doesn't mean I'm to blame for the fact that the abuser shows up, but there's some part of me cooperating with that. There's some part of me, I mean, it might, you know, accidentally happen once, but if it seems to be a regular pattern, I'd be starting to do the worksheet process to look at what's the part of me that holds that I deserve this, you know, and that oftentimes is a power person dynamic. You know, the child of 3, you know, has a parent that's, you know, enraged and delivers the message of blame to the child, and it's all your fault, and you're the guilty one here. It's your fault that your father, your mother is in pain. And if that's taken in by the child as an energetic dynamic, then that thought stored within the structure is like a an energy moving that sets up a wave literally draws somebody and resonates someone in to provide behavior that's consistent with the belief that maybe a three-year-old, not knowing any better, the three-year-old totally, completely innocent, but being bombarded by a power person with abuse and blame, takes on the message that there's something wrong with me and I deserve to be treated with abuse. Of course, that's a pretty painful experience, especially for a young child, and one that the young child would tend to try to push down and hide from themselves. And the more it's pushed down, the more it's hidden, the more that energy is intensified. And, you know, literally there are devices with which to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. And if that high energy wave says, there's something wrong with me and I deserve to be abused, and there's someone comes into my space with the potential to abuse, I'm going to tend to draw that out of them. And so the worksheet process is designed in those sorts of situations to collapse the perception, and you know, the tendency for the child would be to follow the lead of the power person. It's always somebody else's fault. Somebody else is to blame. And what I want to do, if I'm the person who's on the receiving end of that, is to find the part of me that participates, the part of me that draws that in, and start to clean that up, start to forgive, remove that energetic pattern from myself. And at that point, I will tend, once I've faced and removed, forgiven that thought in myself, then I'll no longer draw that energy, that pattern out of them. And one of two things generally happens in an abusive relationship. One, the relationship changes. That person all of a sudden drops their attack, and or the relationship itself drops away. There's no resonance left. There's no interest. There's no energetic attraction anymore. And so the relationship just kind of naturally drops away. So that would be my input, is start doing worksheets around, you know, number one, you know, acknowledging yourself as who you are, your name, and acknowledging yourself as love. Then looking at what your emotion is, what the thought is behind the emotion, what the goal is you have for this object of attention. And the goal would probably be something like, well, I want them to treat me lovingly, gently, and respectfully. And stepping into the core of the forgiveness process, canceling the goal for them to treat you lovingly, gently, and respectfully. And of course, that seems like a silly thing to do, because what the heck, it's a very reasonable thing for me to want them to treat me lovingly, gently, and respect, which is true. And I don't cancel that goal because there's something wrong with that goal. I cancel that goal because the goal is the thing that drives my mind, drives my perceptual construct to unconsciously utilize that unresolved pain in me to build my brain's image of them and see them as the problem in my life. And so when I cancel the goal, what happens is that the pained perception collapses and I can start to drop back into those earlier memories, those earlier experiences that are still hanging around and playing a role in my creative process. And as I surface those things in the presence of love, the tendency is for them to weaken and disappear. And when they disappear, that dynamic's going to change in that relationship. That would be my offering in that regard.
Very good. All right. And we will turn on our caller, which is 770. I believe this is Mike Teddy.
Hello, Michael. How are you, good, sir?
Michael.
Hey, welcome.
Katie,
how are you today?
How are you? Doing good.
We're rocking.
Last night.
We're raking. Yeah. We're rocking and it's raining. We've been out in the garden this morning and it's been raining, and actually a little bit on the cool side here relative to what has been out there. What's the weather doing out there at this point?
We were supposed to have rain about 1 o'clock, and now that's pushed off to 4. And looking at the radar, I'm not so sure it'll happen this even then. So it's cooler, much cooler. It's only 80-ish, and that's very welcome. So.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Well, what's on your mind today? Where are your thoughts going today?
Yes, all over, as usual, but let's narrow this down to a situation that happened last evening with me, and listening to you, this wasn't my original intention to speak about today or to ask questions about today, but listening to what you said earlier about Einstein and the situation you just spoke about with the people, I had a situation last evening as I was about 10 foot from the back steps of the place I live, heading toward the building next door. And, of course, when you're close to home, you're not, guard is kind of down. And as I approach the building, I say, just about 10 feet away from the steps of the home. And I heard leaves rattle. And I froze in my tracks, looked down, and about 1 foot in front of my right leg was a copperhead. Beamed up, mouth open, and I still, it's only the grace of the universe that he didn't hit me. And so I saw that, of course, very startled, because I've had one of those before, and it was a nasty experience. So...
Right.
Listening to what Einstein said, and the thinking is the cause of my problems, can you help me through this and help me understand about if thinking is my problem, why would I be wanting some of that in my life?
Well,
maybe
I'm not
totally
sure.
Different, yeah, maybe I got a misunderstanding of what Einstein said in thinking the cause of my problem. So I'm kind of looking for some guidance there, please.
Well, what comes to mind, we were doing an intensive in Florida back several years ago in kind of a sort of a backwoods area of Florida. And we had a really nice retreat space there. It was actually a private home, but it was sort of isolated down a couple of back roads. And one of the participants in the intensive liked to run every morning. And he came back from a run one day and was just in kind of, he was in a state of marveling at the experience that he'd had. He had gone out for a run, and he'd gone down a couple of different roads, you know, sort of back roads, and all of a sudden found himself facing, and I don't remember, they were German Shepherds or Rottweilers, big, vicious-looking dogs. And, you know, we had been working with the Love Exchange in the intensive and talking about, you know, functioning as the presence of love. And he comes running down this road, and all of a sudden these two big dogs come charging at him, jaws snapping, growling, like ready to tear him apart. And he turned to run, thinking he might be able to outrun them, and realized all of a sudden that he was not going to outrun these dogs. And he turned, and he had remembered the Love Exchange experience from the intensive. It just, you know, sort of came to him that's something that we had just done in the intensive. And in the Love Exchange experience, and I don't think you've done that with us, basically what you do is you sit face-to-face with someone, and each of you tap into the strongest active presence of love that each person can, and one at a time opens their eyes and literally sends that energy of love to their partner, you know, intensifies it so it's tangible within, and sends it to their partner. So we had just done that in the intensive, and he somehow felt or had the guidance, kind of like you said, the grace was there to shift into that space. And he said both of these dogs that were, you know, like really viciously snapping and, you know, ready to tear him apart, stopped and just kind of walked around him and walked away. And he started to head off in the other direction and found himself dropping back into fear. And as instantly, this is how he shared it in the intensive, as instantly as he dropped back into fear, the dog started to, you know, pick up their snapping, their viciousness. And once again, he was able to step into that space of active love. And once again, they quieted down and ended up, you know, he was able to just walk away with no incident with them. So looking at, you know, are we living, there was a great lesson that Job gave us. You know, you look at that whole book of Job, and it's actually the story of a healing crisis. It's someone who's processing their own fear, their own generational patterns. And at one point, you know, after all of the loss over and over and over and over again, all of the loss that occurs, Job comes to the conclusion of what was happening. And what he says is, that which I feared most has come upon me. So having had a nasty experience with a recluse bite, or pardon me, not a recluse, but a snake bite, if there's fear in the mind and there's a snake in the neighborhood, the tendency energetically, until that's forgiven, and, you know, that would be a good place to do worksheets, the tendency would be, if there's a snake in the neighborhood, it's going to arouse the energy of the snake to approach and bite. So if you think about snakes, is there some forgiveness work to be done around the fear of snakes?
So it could actually be the fear of that situation is what brought it out, showing me that there's work to do in that area.
That was Job's insight, really bright and clear. Mm-hmm. I mean, he says it just as simple and straightforward, that which I feared most has come upon me. And, you know, fear is simply an energy, and to intensify it is to set up a stronger and stronger field that will tend to draw us toward circumstances or draw circumstances toward us that will play that out, whether it's in the human realm or the animal realm or whatever arena it's in, relationship. You know, someone who has fear of, you know, destruction in a relationship, energetically, you know, of the millions of people we could interact with, two sets of eyes turn toward each other, and there's a resonance, there's an attraction. If that attraction is based in fear and pain, then if the two involved in that relationship aren't conscious enough and doing the work of forgiveness, they're going to tend to play out that fear and pain with each other. And what started out as, you know, oh, it's such a wonderful, sweet, awesome relationship, all of a sudden it collapses into the unconscious internalized fear and hostility that's there. Mm-hmm. Does that fit? Does that make sense?
Yes. It's a little, I'm on the way to understanding more. And what's even more amazing to me is I haven't encountered that in probably that situation probably a month, but this is as close as, and several times over the last years, but that's the closest that, I mean, there's no reason why that thing shouldn't have got me. And except for the grace, you know, the grace of universe, and very thankful. But the interesting twist to this is about 4 hours earlier, I stopped by a buddy's house, and he was telling me about a situation with one of his cats, I think it was, and a copperhead And this was probably about 20, 25 feet from their back porch area.
Right.
Entrance. And how he had to basically save that cat, because it was a younger cat, from getting entangled with that
copperhead.
Which he did.
So
that was about four hours earlier.
Ah, okay. So that would certainly resonate the fear of snakes.
Interesting twist. I mean, the situation with the cat happened at another time, but he was telling me the story
right.
4 hours earlier. And then I come
back. But that's when all of those brain cells were resonating. Yes.
Isn't that something?
Well, you know,
wow.
you really offer a reason for doing one's work immediately. Whatever, you know, if I realize that something's resonated in me in any arena, it doesn't matter if it's in the financial arena or the legal arena or the relationship arena or, you know, whatever arena, if I recognize that something unlike love is moving in me, that's the time that I want to engage in the forgiveness process. If I don't, the fact that that's resonated in me, and remember the that law of resonance, the law of energy exchange, that resonance creates motion. You know, if I have two baby grand pianos and I open the top of each of them and I bang out a middle C on one of those baby grand pianos, and if I look inside of it, there's hundreds of strings in the piano, only the strings related to middle C are going to be moving in that piano. If I go to the second piano and look inside, only the strings related to middle C are going to be moving in that second piano, and it's resonance that creates motion. And, of course, they're inanimate objects. You know, if I put a middle C tuning fork in front of a second middle C tuning fork, that second tuning fork is going to tend to move. Now, it's not going to get up. It doesn't have legs. It's not going to get up and move toward me, but in the human realm, I'm going to tend to move toward what's resonating in me. And if that, in this case, the snake, has the ability to create motion, it's going to tend to move toward me as well. That's the law of resonance. That's how energy fields work. And so as immediately as I experience some form of fear in me or hostility in me, that's the time to take out a worksheet and go to the underlying hidden energy that most people don't want to look at, don't want to deal with, don't want to feel, and process through it. Open that, you know, the veil of the temple, the barrier beneath which we usually keep those things hidden, especially if it's been resonated in me. I want to access it. I want to process through it to the degree that I can at the moment. Elsewise, I'm going to tend to put myself in, you know, gee, I'm going to go for a walk, and I'm going to walk up the road or down the road. If all other things are equal, and I just heard the story about the snake, I'm going to tend to walk in the direction of the closest possible interaction with the snake. And the snake's going to tend through resonance, not through any kind of conscious volition or will, but just through resonance, is going to tend to move in that same direction. And then comes the deeper opportunity to learn forgiveness. And, of course, that applies in relationships with people. You know, if there's something that I fear about a certain person, and, you know, for most people, they're like, well, I'll just pretend that's not there. I'll just ignore that. I'll just forget about that. I don't want to think that or deal with that. We're saying, no, do the opposite. Move toward it with with conscious, active, present love in you. Open the veil of your own temple, the barrier that keeps things closed. Allow that fear or that hostility to come forward, to be embraced and dissolved, transmuted through the presence of love. Otherwise, you get to have a why is this happening to me again experience. The title of my book.
I can see that now. So a wise thing to do would have been to do a worksheet very soon after this situation.
Yeah, and, you know, I might not, in an offhanded setting like that, you know, if it's someone that you're interacting with that knows the work, you might say, you know, that really resonates some stuff with me. Would you sit with me and go through a worksheet? Or I might just, even at that moment, if I realize that there's a really serious energy in me, I'm going to want to make a note. When I've got the time, I'm going to sit down and really go in and do some deeper work in that arena. Otherwise, in that moment, if I recognize there's some fear moving in me, I might just do the short form of the process, and that is look at what's the goal I'm holding for whatever this fear is about that's moving in me. I'm going to cancel that goal. I'm going to ask that power in me, Ruka Dikucha, to move this energy, to forgive this energy from me. And so just do a short form of the process. Just, you know, I'm driving down the road and, you know, a driver comes in a dangerous way and I almost get creamed, cancel the thought. And I realize that there's a fear in there about that, and I'm driving along those that happen. I'm going to do a worksheet. You know, I may, if it's really serious, I may pull off the road and actually do a written worksheet or open my phone and do one in the app. Or I'm going to go through the steps of the process and process that energy in me so that, you know, 10 miles down the road, where there's another person who's not paying attention, they just happen to, in their not paying attention, get drawn to my energy, and bingo, there's the accident that didn't happen 10 miles back. Again, cancel the thought, but the sooner when I see I have an issue, the sooner I'm willing to work on it, the faster I'm going to process through the energy. That if I don't process through it, I'm probably going to unconsciously be drawn to creating it.
Mm-hmm.
As Job said, that which I feared most, and we could add in there, that which I feared most and failed to forgive has come upon me.
Wow. So even though I didn't notice anything in myself when my friend was telling me the story about the copperhead, subconsciously it was... There were thoughts and things in motion, and hence that brought forth another scenario for me, because I didn't feel anything that I knew of. Does that make any sense? That I would not have.
Yeah, maybe there was no buzz whatsoever in that conversation, but there was a resonance. But I threw that in as a thought, because we have had a conversation previously where you mentioned that you had been bitten and it was pretty nasty by a copperhead, and so there was obviously some energy around it, and so in that situation, if it moved and I'm paying attention inside of me, and you know, one of the subtle ways of paying attention is to just always be on guard and looking at the language that we're using. Listen to your speech. And oftentimes things that, you know, maybe I'm in the habit of not feeling, not dealing with, not looking at, if I just watch my speech and all of a sudden I see that happens to pop in, it's like, there's a clue that there's something under the surface that my speech is telling me it would be good to look at. And then you hear Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he said, and this is the physicist, that what I see here is a physicist speaking. He says, the power of life and death is in our words. So if I'm thinking or speaking words that are on a negative vent, on a disintegrative path, that's when I want to pay attention to those words and use them as a guide into the next level of my own unconscious dynamics to clean them out, to forgive, to remove that energy.
I had forgotten about that statement. Could you tell me again in your words about the statement from Yahshua? Is it the power is in the words? Is that
the power of life and death is in our words. In other words, just by what we do with our, I mean, remembering that words represent frequencies, represent thoughts. You know, if you go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, it doesn't say that. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. When you think of your body-mind unit, you know, you'd watch not too long ago the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and we talked about, you know, this body-mind unit is an energy system, and that relative to the energy system, there are two qualities of energy. There's that which build it up, integrative energy, and that which tears it down, disintegrative energy.
Mm-hmm.
My words come from the energies that are moving in me. If my words are of a disintegrative nature, and I don't use them as a clue to clean up my own mind, my own energy system, then by giving vent to disintegrative energy, I'm going to tend to move literally my physiology toward death. If I notice that my verbiage, my language, or my thoughts are moving in the direction of disintegrative energy, that's the place to apply forgiveness to remove those disintegrative energies so that all of the words that I speak are based in life. And what is life? Life is love flowing through a cell. If I'm using words that inhibit the flow of love through my cellular structure, I am with my words and my thoughts moving my energy system toward death. And when you think about it, you know, my background's in physics, electronics actually, with a kind of a side study in physics. And if you think about, from a physics point of view, what we've been told and what the scientists say is energy is eternal. It's neither created nor destroyed. But its form can be changed. If that's true, then we must be energy, neither created nor destroyed. But the form can be changed. What do we call the changing of the form but death? When we engage in a disintegrative energy, we're moving in that direction. And so if life is the active presence of love, and I'm using words that inhibit or restrict the flow of love through my cellular structure, which, you know, fear and love can't be active in a mind at the same time. If I'm moving in the direction of fear, then I'm literally moving in the direction of death. And if energy systems are eternal and there is only energy, then we must be energy. We must be eternal. When you think about if we were designed to live for eternity, which is my thesis, that's what we were offered, and we kill this thing in 80 or 90 or 100 years, that's really a tragedy. And how do we kill it? By engaging in conversations and energetic patterns based in hostility and fear, which restrict the flow of love through our cellular structure.
This was amazing. Amazing, sir.
All right. Well, we're down to the last minute, so let's continue the conversation Monday, if that's appropriate. Appreciate you sending love and safety and support in your direction and cleaning out everything to do with snakes.
Thank all of you.
All right, sir. Have a blessed one. Lots of love. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.